G7, number 7B.
She begins the chapter with the following few sentences, which I want to read because they seem to cover the whole subject of the 10th chapter. Namely, she starts out in the same vein as I said before, in the material world. So you start out with the material world. What is the material world? In the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity. Again, you have a quick development with great rapidity, many useful wonders. Think of it, what she would say today compared with her days, where useful wonders are for us today just little tiny inventions compared with all the inventions of our age. How much more she would have been wondering and calling them many useful wonders. Then, she says, with like activity, with the same speed, with like activity, have thought's swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real. So she puts side by side two worlds, so to say, in the material world and then afterwards in the spiritual world, puts them side by side and says they have the same rapidity, with the same swiftness. The pinions have been rising in the spiritual realm towards the real, the realm of the real. Namely, to the spiritual cause, of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. Can you see the picture? She starts out with the pictures of the material world that has grown rapidly, has brought forth many useful wonders. Then, side by side, so to say, she says, the same thing happened in the spiritual world. Also in the spiritual world, thought has been rising rapidly towards the realm of the real, the spiritual real. But then if she would leave it at that, she would have duality. So she resolves that duality by having after the comma the explanation, namely that the spiritual realm is the cause of those lower things that give impulse to inquiry. So that she says that material world and the rapidity of invention, those wonders, have actually not a material cause. If you go way back to the cause, that they have actually a spiritual cause. That actually the spiritual realm was that which caused the material realm to bring forth those many wonders. This is something that we have to see very clearly, because we will come back to this many times in this week, and it must be understood very clearly so that we don't fall back into spiritualism. That would be the very opposite of what I would like to achieve. That it is not spiritualism, that spirit materializes itself. That would be spiritualism. What she wants to bring out is something very different. Instead, that we see the material world, which brings forth many useful wonders, instead of we putting into that statement an interpretation which is wrong, namely that we interpret it as if the material world was developing and evolving. We could also see the other way around, namely that the material world brings forth new wonders because it loses its limitations. When matter loses its limitations, it begins to disappear. It is on the way out. And the way in is the spiritual today. And the way in of the spiritual is, as he says, the spiritual cause of those lower things, of those material things, of those technological things, which seem to be wonders and which give thought for inquiry. So that what we call material evolution is not the evolution of matter. It is the evolution of spirit. In which way? Through the evolution of spirit, matter loses its limitations. All the new discoveries are putting off limitations. And it is very interesting that way back once when I flew over to America on the way for a seminar, I read a book by a Professor Birch in Australia on creation. And he said that very thing very simply. He said, what we call material evolution is nothing else but taking away the limitations of matter. It's lifting the limitations from matter. The less matter has limitations, naturally the freer the field is, and therefore more and more so-called wonders can appear. So this is a great point, that we reorient our consciousness in regard to material evolution, to material technology and so on. So that people, when they say, well, what about the spiritual? That's nothing compared with what the natural scientists do today, what they can do in biology, what they can do in medicine, what they can do in physics, what they can see in astrophysics, what they can do in nuclear physics. This is terrific what material science brings forth. And we can say yes and cannot. It's absolutely wonderful. But it's not because matter is more intelligent. It's not because matter has gained more intelligence. But it is because the spiritual has taken off the limitation of matter. That is evolution and that is creation. That's what she points out here in just a few sentences. Yes? Shall I read those sentences again? You know, if we understand that, the whole chapter is covered. And the whole question that we have about spirit versus matter is being answered. Again, I read it again to you. In the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. Many useful wonders, let's say technology, be it in chemistry, be it in biology, be it in physics, many useful wonders. What are these wonders? Side by side, she says, with like activity, have thought swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real, the spiritual, to the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. Do we see it now rightly? As we go on, we have other examples that show it clearer and clearer. So from this point on, from this chapter on, we begin to realize that that fundamentally all so-called material things, that so-called matter, can be reduced and reduced until we see it as spirit. But that's not spiritualism. Don't tell afterwards Max teaches that matter is spirit. I don't say that. But I say that matter, which we first call an illusion, and which then we call that illusion is nothing else but the objective state of mortal mind, and say, well, matter is just the objectification of mortal mind, and leave it at that. That's not going back far enough. If we read Mrs. Eddy's writing further, we see that she brings mortal mind back to the divine mind, because she said, mortal mind does not exist, it is just a counterfeit of the divine mind, and therefore brings everything back to the divine mind, which is spirit. Then we have the real cause of those lower things. Yes? Just as the second record of creation is brought back to the first record of creation by showing that it is only the counterfeit of the fact in the first record of creation. So the first record of creation is really the initiative for the second record of creation. What is the second record of creation? It's dissolving the belief of the Adam mystic belief away, dissolving it step by step, until Cain went out into the land of Nod, into the dreamland, into the land of illusion, and is brought back to nothing. All right. This is what we see. Naturally, I've touched on that before. Naturally, we can see that everything that is new, so to say, in the material world, and has been discovered in the material world, we could, if we would analyze it properly, bring it back to a spiritual development. That the spiritual development was the first, and that the shadowing forth of that spiritual development is a material invention, is a material development. That's what we could see over the last 40, 50 years so clearly. We could see that when Christian Science was bringing forth, especially when John Dorley started out and showing that Christian Science is the science of all sciences, that it's a science of the potato patch. But it isn't a science that has nothing to do with the potato patch. But it's a science. Therefore, we must see that the moment we begin to see something new in Christian Science, you will always find that afterwards, year afterwards, 2 years afterwards or so, there is a material counterfeit science coming up, or a material counterfeit invention being made. One example. Now you must excuse me if I repeat myself too often, because only a week ago I was giving the same subject in California, and then I don't know anymore if I have brought that example in California or here. But one of the very, very interesting thing is, we live today, the whole world lives today on the computers. Take away the computer for a day and the world falls into pieces. Yes. When was the computer invented? Round about the middle of the 40th of this century. Professor Wiener was, so to say, then more or less the inventor of it. And I remember I was in New York at that time, And I read the newspaper, and there was an article in it showed for the first time what the Wiener has discovered as a computer. It was a very strange thing for me. I couldn't understand what it really meant. Today everybody knows what the computer is, but not everybody knows, but most people know that it runs on the cybernetic law of input, process, output, feedback. That is a fundamental rule on which cybernetics run. Four sides of the holy city. But 4 years before that, John Dorley was constantly thinking about the four-side city, about the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science. He was thinking constantly about this deep rule, the deep law of the four-sided city. That was the new law against the law of causality, which had only a cause and an effect, and that's full stop. But he could see here a completely new law is being brought forth through understanding the foresight of the holy city. That was the spiritual cause of the computer age. The whole world is running on the computer. They haven't the faintest idea that it has a spiritual cause. And that spiritual cause was right before Professor Wiener invented the computer. You could go even further back and say, what is that holy city, those four sides of the holy city, that highest symbol of the whole Bible, of the whole Bible? That holy city was the city which was in the vision that Abraham had, that he went out of the land of Ur in order to find the city. That's the beginning of the Bible, that Abraham went out of Ur to find the city. The end of the Bible is the city. So actually Abraham was the computer man. He already somehow very faintly saw that law, the law of the city. And then came the city. And when the city came, John would say, I can't tell you much about the city, you would not understand it, but I will send you the Comforter. And the Comforter came in Mrs. Eddy, or in the textbook in Divine Science, and put it down, and explained those four sides of the city. Then came John Dorley and said, I tell you what it really means. What are the implications of those four sides of the holy city? It's not just one nice symbol, as you have thousands other symbols in the Bible. It is the symbol for, at the end of the Bible, in order to give, so to say, the starting point again for another paradigm shift, namely for Mrs. Eddy to explain it, what those four sides are, and then for Dorley to show the impact of it and the living experience of it, quality of it. So can you see what she says here? That has its impact, or another term, that is true for every development. We have to bring back the material development right back to its spiritual cause, without being spiritualists. It's not spirit that materializes itself. It's spirit that takes away the limits of matter. And so taking away the limits of matter, think how it has taken away the limits of matter. When Columbus came to America, it took him quite a journey. When I go to America, it's just reading a little book on the plane, that's all. No danger, no incertitude, no adventure, just having a nice meal and reading a book, and that's that. That's taking off the limits of matter, of distance, of time, everything. Taking off the limits. Yeah. We go to the next chapter, namely some objections answered. And what I felt in here in regard to the self-evolution of science is that she wants to show here that the higher meaning of Christian Science cannot be understood at once. Here she really pinpoints and stresses that point, that the development takes time, that it needs patience and step-by-step development. She says, I have never supposed the world would immediately witness the full fruitage of Christian Science. She knew it would take time. The higher meaning cannot at once be catched. So if a student comes to me and says, I don't quite get it, I have been devoting my time to study, but it's slow, I say, yes, that's okay. That's according to the law. It takes time. But it takes less and less time as we go on because of the acceleration that is at work. She says, thought must first be educated up to spiritual apprehension. Thought must first be educated up to spiritual apprehension. That's what we do through classes and summer school. We try to educate thought to spiritual apprehension, so that we try somehow to take thought, the thought of the students, away from the material apprehension, from their problem, from their daily life problems, and say, look here, these are not the problems. The problem, the only problem we have, is to advance spiritually, to educate ourselves, to change our standpoint from the personal standpoint, from the material standpoint, change it to the spiritual standpoint, and look out from the spirit and from the synonymous term, and we teach you what the synonymous terms are. That's a long process. It's an education to spiritual apprehension. We must first, that's again a first, grow into the stature of manhood in Christ Jesus. That's what is necessary. We can't say, it doesn't matter who I am and what I do and how I think. The main thing is that I try to understand Christian Science. That's not the right attitude. Right attitude is that we start with ourselves. If we ourselves are not the transparency for revelation, revelation will never come through. So here she said, take care that you yourself as a man, as a woman, that you first grow to the stature of the manhood or of the womanhood in Christ Jesus. You must at length know yourself spiritually and scientifically, she says here. Do we do that? Perhaps we do quite a bit to know ourselves spiritually, because we know that man is spiritual. We have read that somewhere in the textbook, so we think it must be true, and so we repeat it and repeat it. But do we really, in a living way, try to find, to know ourselves spiritually? That's quite a job. One sees always that one still is at the same place where we were years ago, that we are still thinking personally. I think this and that and the other way. Am I, to my opinion, it's so and so and so. Still taking ourselves personally, materially, corporeally, not spiritually. That's quite a big job to make that step. But the even bigger step is what she says, that we should not know ourselves only spiritually, but also scientifically. Scientifically. Who knows himself scientifically? Or I would put it the other way around. Who takes a little bit of a time in a day to know himself scientifically and to ask himself or herself, ask, what am I as a calculus of ideas, as a divine calculus of ideas? What I am? What am I as a scientific calculus of ideas? Have you ever taken time for that? Do you remember what we saw before, in the chapter before, that she said that the time will come when the divine origin of man will be recognized to be divine science? That our origin is divine science. When our origin is divine science, then we can consider ourselves scientifically. But we very seldom do that. All what we do is that we say we are the idea of God, and God is perfect, therefore man is perfect. But that's not knowing oneself spiritually. That's just a formula that we have. But to sit down and be quiet and to look into infinity and see the infinite in its wholeness, the infinite in its seven and the four and the four, and see the whole model of consciousness, of being, and then say, and then see, that is me. I am that model of consciousness. That model of consciousness is not just a chart hanging on the wall or a chart in the book. That is not just something that is outside of me. That's my stature of my manhood in Christ Jesus. That's my being. That model of being is me. It has nothing to do anymore with my body. It has nothing to do anymore with my thinking, with my thoughts, with my brain, and etc. It has only to do with God's idea that has an infinite calculus of being. Do we do that? You see, we always come nearer and nearer to the fact that the revelation of a new concept of science can only break through us if we are prepared for it, if we are of the same nature as being is, that the nature of being and our nature must be the same nature. There is not a nature out there which is godlike, and then here am I as a mortal with mortal thought. That's a duality of the greatest extension. We have to see that we are that chart. Then we know ourselves scientifically. And it takes a little time each day, I would say. We do so many things each day which are not worth a cent, you say. Not worth a cent. Why don't we take time for something that is of the greatest value? To know ourselves spiritually and scientifically. Yes.